And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Today's theme is burning issues. My first guest wrote a biography of one of the greatest financial reformers after the crash of 1929, Ferdinand Pecora. My second guest, Mike Farrell, we talked about the need for reform in our political discourse. My next guest is truly a thought leader on the subject of technology. He's written a new book that causes me to think about technology in a completely different way. If you want to join the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. That's 639-0008. Kevin Kelly is the senior maverick at Wired Magazine. He co-founded Wired Magazine in 1993, and he served as its executive editor from its inception until 1999. His latest book is titled What Technology Wants, and we're going to ask him, what does technology want? Kevin is also the editor and publisher of Cool Tools website, which gets about 500,000 unique visitors per month. From 1984 to 1990, Kelly was the publisher and editor of the Whole Earth Review, a journal of unorthodox technology news. He co-founded the ongoing Hackers Conference and was involved in the launch of Well, which is a pioneering on-site service, which started way back in 1985. And he's authored a couple of other great books, the best-selling New Rules for the New Economy and the classic book on decentralization, Out of Control. Welcome to the show, Kevin Kelly. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you. It's our pleasure. And I know you're back east somewhere in Boston getting ready for a talk tonight. But I want to discuss your new book, What Technology Wants. It's interesting because in the book you state that technologies are inevitable and that we have a moral obligation to increase the amount of technology in the world. At the same time, you're not trying to anthropomorphize the technology and make us think that it's kind of a living, breathing thing. So tell us, what do you mean? Why do we have a moral obligation to increase the amount of technology we use?
Because what technology really gives us, besides making more problems, is making more choices, solutions, possibilities, freedoms. And that means that every person who has a, each one of us has a different face and a slightly different arrangement of talents and abilities. We need technologies to be able to release those. So imagine the world, what a loss it would have been if Mozart had been born before we had invented the symphony or the piano. What a loss that would have been. Or if Alfred Hitchcock had been born before we invented cinema technology. So there's somewhere today, some Shakespeare who is been born, and we have not yet invented the technology for her or his complete expression of those. And so we need to invent the possibilities and the options for other people in the future generations.
All right. I can see that. But, you know, you bring up an interesting point because we don't have the recorded history. How do we know that Shakespeare, somebody as brilliant or more brilliant than Shakespeare, didn't exist as we were huddled around a campfire telling stories in a cave?
That's right. You know, he might have been digging potatoes, and he could have been writing symphonies instead. And so we really need to bring the full possibility space of technology to all people, and that includes not just the new stuff, but making sure that, you know, that everyone in the world has the technologies of clean water, abundant food, good health care. So that's part of the vision too. So we need to bring those expanding possibilities that technology brings to everybody and invent the new stuff for everybody in the world.
All right. I mean, that makes sense. We're talking to Kevin Kelly, everybody, the book, What Technology Wants. And Kevin, central to your thesis is this term that you call the technium. And really, it's a broad definition of technology that not only includes computers and cell phones and that sort of thing, but also the arts, culture, social institutions, even business practices and so forth. But help describe for us, because it's a confusing term. What is the technium? Why does it matter to us?
Yeah, well, we can think of the technium as, you know, first of all, lots of technology, things that are in your pocket and the internet and the factories of the world, but also the intangibles that you mentioned, like, you know, invention of the calendar and then things like, you know, cultural things like the invention of movies and books and stuff. But all the difference between that and, say, just regular culture is that all this stuff for the first time is connected together. I mean, the little phone you have in your pocket, there's probably about 1,000 different technologies that are required to make that. So that's dependent on all these other things. And all these things we make form kind of like an ecology of technologies that exhibit their own agenda. They have their own force. It's like a system that has its own tendencies. And we have to understand that technology as a whole, what I call the technium, has its own agenda. So we need to figure out what that agenda is.
All right, now this is the crux of the book, and this is the part where it gets interesting. So if the technium is an ecology, and we think of ecology as vibrant, living, and moving, and growing, and everything else. And as you said, the technium has its own agenda. Does that mean by definition that the technium is self-aware and that we're going to have HAL 5000 from 2001 Space Odyssey?
Well, there's lots of things that have lots of living, say, organisms that have their own, say, biases that aren't self-aware. So there are grasshoppers they want light and they want food, and there's, you know, little earthworms, and they sort of move towards the up and down. So, and then they aren't at all self-aware or self-conscious. And so I'm suggesting that the technium as a whole, even though it has its own agenda, that agenda is not conscious. It's not that it's thinking or an artificial intelligence. But it's like a plant. It wants to move towards light in a certain direction. It wants to move in a certain direction. And so I'm suggesting that it's not smart, but that it's like a living force.
All right, so it's more like a plant, and it wants to move towards light. We're talking to Kevin Kelly, everybody, his book, What Technology Wants. And Kevin, of course, it begs the question now, what does technology want?
What technology wants is actually very similar to what life wants, because it is, in the final analysis, an extension and acceleration of the evolutionary force that's running through the universe. And it was moving towards increasing complexity, towards increasing diversity, it's increasing specialization, increasing ubiquity, increasing mutualism, increasing freedoms and choices. So, like, when I say increasing specialization, you know, the first cell that was made was a general cell, and then over time we have specialized cells. In the same way, when we first make a technology, it's a general thing. So the first camera was a camera, and then you have specialized infrared camera, underwater camera, you know, high altitude camera, panoramic camera. So we keep specializing more and more. And the same thing with everything we make. We make them general first, a hammer, and then we have specialized hammers that do this or that, or specialized scissors. And that's going to be the general thing. Whenever we invent something like genetic sequencing, it's general first, and then it'll be, well, genetic sequencing for certain kind of animals, for certain kind of animals that live in certain places. We'll just keep specializing. So that is something we can bank on. We know that in the future, technology is going to become more specialized.
All right. Well, now, technology is like the ecology that it has. It's moving towards complexity, diversity, and everything else. Is technology a tool of society, or is it our out-of-control master?
Now, that's a good question. It's both, really. And here's how it is both. It's both because we are both slaves to this thing that we've created, and we are also the masters of it in the way that we are our own creations. At the 50,000 years ago, when we invented language and things like cooking, when we invented cooking, we kind of basically made an external stomach that we could digest food in the pot that our stomach could not digest, which changed our nutrition, which changed our jaws and our teeth. So our invention of cooking actually changed us physically. And in the same way language has changed us and how we think, we have made ourselves. We are the first animals that we domesticated. Humans are the first domesticated animals. So we are a technology ourselves. Of course, we are the makers of it. And that self-generation thing where we're both the change and the changer is going to be true about technology from here on out. We are both slaves to it and masters of it.
Oh, now, how can we get in front of the technology, Kevin Kelly?
That is a good question. Also, how are we going to, as we make it more complex, how can we retain control of it? I think we have to think of technology as kind of like our children, in the same way that we don't want our children to be kind of puppets or robots. We want to let go of them at some point. So we do that by training them, by instilling values, by making sure that they have the right friends and the right job. And I think we do the same thing with our technologies, is we want to move them into the right place and find the right environment for them, the right job, I like to say. And that's how we gain control over them.
All right. I like that analogy, especially the children's side of things. We're talking to Kevin Kelly, everybody. His latest book, What Technology Wants. Fascinating read in this. And Kevin, I've always believed, and your book sort of changed my thinking on this, I've always believed that technology is neither good nor evil. It's in the application of the technology that creates the good or the evil. Take the airplane, for example. That's a great example. I love going on jet airplanes. It can be used as a jetliner to take me to see my parents in St. Louis. It can also be used as a bomber to bomb Dresden and firebomb that area as well. But you write in your book that technology is not neutral. And that sort of disrupted my whole thinking there, that it tends towards positive. How and why is that?
Yeah, I mean the orthodoxy is that it's just a tool. It's a neutral tool. We can use it for destruction or creation. But it's interesting that we don't think of children that way. We don't say, well, children are neutral. We say, no, children are good. And the reason why they're good is because even though they have the capability to grow up to destroy and do harm, the fact that we have, the fact that the technology gives us the choice to do harm or do good, it's itself a good. Okay, and that little tiny good, the fact that we have a new choice we didn't have before, that little tiny good pushes it over just very, very slightly into the good side. So it's interesting that we don't need very much. Even if technology is only 0.1% more creative than destructive, 1% compounded over centuries produces civilization. That's what we have. So I think technology is just a little bit better than neutral, but that over time creates a very powerful force for good.
All right. I'm with you, Kevin. I can buy into that. Now, interestingly enough, though, in your book, you've got a chapter that's titled The Unabomber Was Right. And that's, of course, Ted Kaczynski, everybody who doesn't know. And you write there that the self-aggrandizing nature of the technium, its tendency to propagate and strengthen itself without making humanity's best interest, without taking humanity's best interest into account. That sounds ominous. I mean, that sounds like this has got a drive and it's not thinking about us as the people. Should we be afraid of the technium?
Well, you know, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, he was right in the sense that he understood that the technium as a whole has an agenda. He was wrong about several things. One, he was wrong to use his hatred for this system to as an excuse for his psychopathic murdering of other people.
Right.
But he was also wrong in the sense that he thought that the agenda for this technium was to rob people of freedom, when actually, in fact, it increases the freedom and choices of others by increasing the choices of what we can do. And this is why people all over the world throughout history have always gravitated to wherever there's more technology, like in cities, because they have increasing choices of what to do with their lives.
Hmm. All right. We're talking to Kevin Kelly, everybody, author of the book What Technology Wants. And because technology is like an ecology, that it's moving forward and it has its own agenda, as you say, give us, what are some of technology's trajectories that we should be looking at?
The very clearest one, which is, again, it's an extension of the direction in evolution. So unlike what some, you know, evolutionary biologists have suggested, there is a direction to evolution over time. It really is moving towards more complexity. It's also moving towards more diversity, and it's moving towards more specialization, and it's also moving towards more energy density. So interestingly, the most energy-dense thing that we know in the universe is not the sun, it's not plants, it's actually the chip in your PC.
No.
It is so energy-dense that if it was any more energy-dense, it would melt. And that's, of course, one of the the challenges of designing new computers is that they're so energy dense that they melt. But it is the most energy dense thing that we know about in the entire universe. And so the general trend is for technology to go in that direction of more energy dense, more diverse, more specialized, more complex, more ubiquitous, more quickly evolving, which is a very key thing, because what that means is things are going to accelerate.
Ooh, that's going to be ominous for us in the future as well. Kevin, another part of the book that I just found interesting and fascinating at the same time is you've got a chapter in there on the Amish. Now, the Amish have always, in my mind, been technology averse. I mean, they drive around in horses and wagons, and they use manual implements for farming and things like that. What can the Amish teach us about technology adoption?
Yeah, I mean, the common perception of the Amish is that they're Luddites, that they're against technologies, or kind of escape from it or refusing it. And that's actually not true at all. My time with the Amish, it was a complete surprise, because they turn out to be hackers. They just love the technology. But what they do is they're very, very selective in the kind of technologies that they have, and they have they've articulated a very clear criteria for deciding which technologies to accept. And they take the technologies that will allow them to strengthen their families so they can work at home or in the backyard and stay and strengthen their communities. And so that's why they do horse and buggy. It's not because they have anything against technologies. Some of these horse and buggies have battery-powered LED turn signals. And they spend a lot of time in making these things. But they're against that because they realized once they had cars, they would drive out to shop outside of the community. They would go visit parks outside. If they had a horse and buggy, they could only go 15 miles, so they had to stay nearby, visit the sick, their relatives. And so that's why they went with the horse and buggy. And they, they have nothing against using genetically modified crops, which they use BT corn. They use disposable diapers. They use, and they're adopting, cell phones, because they find that those things actually bring their families and their communities together.
Ah, great. We're talking to Kevin Kelly, everybody, his book, What Technology Wants. And Kevin, I found it interesting that you're on the record as saying this is the last dead tree book that you're ever going to write.
Yeah.
And the dead tree is my term. But, what makes you say that? That's an interesting statement.
Well, I think I want to go where the attention is going. I mean, to tell you the truth, young people like my son, who's 14 years old, he's spending his attention watching YouTube clips, not reading books. And so if you kind of want to reach the young today, you really need to be where they are. And they're not reading paper books. They're reading online and websites and stuff. And so wherever the attention goes, money will follow. And I'm suggesting that the economics of cutting down paper trees and shipping them around are just can't really compete with the idea of shipping bits around. And so I want to spend my energies where people are really going to spend their attention.
Ah, so bits more than atoms. Nicholas Negroponte was the one who created that idea.
Exactly.
Wonderful stuff. We're talking, everybody, to Kevin Kelly. What Technology Wants is his latest book. It's a fascinating read, great to pick up for Christmas time. Real quickly, in the last 10 seconds that we've got, Kevin, what did you get out of writing this book?
I learned that I wanted to minimize the amount of technology in my life while maximizing the amount of technology in the lives of others, so that they increase the options for everyone.
That is great and well said. Thank you, Kevin Kelly, for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Talk to you soon.